Hello and a very warm welcome to Monocle on Design Extra. It's that show brought to you by the team behind Monocle's dedicated weekly design programme, and I'm your host, Josh Fennett. Each episode we plunge into a story that we think deserves just a little bit more attention. Today we hold our breath and dive into the world of swimming pools with author Christopher Beanland. His nattily titled new book, published by Batsford, is entitled Lido, A Dip into Outdoor Swimming Pools, The History, Design and People Behind Them. There, that wasn't so hard, was it? Here's Christopher Beanland now talking about how swimming pools can be both status symbols and sites of social inclusion. Take it away, Chris.
Pools are, as with all architecture, they're places that can connote exclusivity or they can be inclusive public spaces. We see pools as status symbols. When you look at the great luxury hotels, they all have their amazing rooftop pools where you can luxuriate while a pool boy brings you a towel, or you know, someone will come along and bring you a mimosa. And obviously when we go on holiday, we love to be in those environments because it's a very pleasant place to be. The pool as a status symbol comes around a lot when we look at this. So you see it in hotels, you see it in private houses like the Lautner and Neutra houses in Palm Springs, all came with their pool, places that David Hockney loved to paint. You could argue that as well as being these public places, the public lidos that were built in the New Deal era in the USA and in Australia and in the UK especially, are also status symbols in a way, because it's the local authority saying, okay, we're going to build this thing, but it's for everyone, in the way that, you know, they would build like tower blocks as kind of show off social housing for everyone back in that era as well. The Art Deco era is really important for lidos and swimming pools. So you see loads of them being built in that era. Some of them are modest structures. So London Fields, where I tend to go swimming as often as I can when I'm in London, is not a flashy lido. It's a very, very kind of simple brick design. But then also from that era, you see things which are very flamboyant. Saltdene Lido in Sussex, which looks like it has these two arms wrapping round the swimmers. North Sydney Olympic Pool, where you have this kind of seaside jazz age designs, dancing starfish and shells and seagulls tiled onto the side of the pool, which look fantastic and put you in a very jaunty mood when you go swimming there. The Zollverein pool in Germany, which is built within this old mining and steel manufacture complex, which has been restored as a heritage site, is really, really fun, really interesting. One of Bjarke Ingels' first projects, a floating pool on the harbour in Copenhagen, which has this wonderful kind of raised platform that you can dive off. And the lifeguard tower looks like this weird kind of red object that you might see by the side of an airport runway or something, some kind of like weather station. The thing about swimming is, because it's a fun activity, architects have been able to let their imaginations run riot in a lot of cases and come up with designs that are quite quirky and interesting, because it's quite a playful type of use. So it kind of fits quite an interesting avant-garde use of design. The Lido, I guess, has had the typical three-act play structure. So we see this incredible boom in pools being built around the 20s and the 30s. Then as the 20th century moves on, tastes change. And in the 70s, 80s, 90s, they're kind of in the middle of this perfect storm where we have cheap flights so people can fly to holiday spots on the beach. They can go to places with nicer weather like Mexico or Mallorca. So those kind of urban Lidos in the US and Northern Europe aren't the only option that people have. They can go to sunnier places for their holidays more cheaply. And then at the same time, you have this movement where things are going indoors. So rather than people wanting to go shopping in the street, you have the shopping mall expanding. The planners thought that rather than wanting to go swimming outside, people would want to go swimming inside. So they built these leisure centres under one roof, like the famous one in Rhyl in Wales, which had its own monorail. These weird indoor leisure centres with slides became more popular. Now what we see is a complete flip of that. So that one in Rhyl has been demolished. There's a really interesting case in Rotterdam where their indoor leisure centre stopped being popular. People didn't want to go there anymore. So rather than knocking it down, they kept it sort of as it was. And now there are these hipster bars and restaurants in amongst the slides and the frogs that used to spurt water out. And now what we want to see again is outdoor swimming. So Lidos are becoming more popular. A lot of them closed in the 80s, despite a lot of local opposition. People were really trying to save their local pools back then. Many more towns used to have them in the UK. Dozens and dozens of them have gone. Places like Southampton, Birmingham, Derby. Then we also see now Lidos being reopened. There was one in Reading, which was derelict, which reopened. I was at Charlton Lido, which was the first in the UK to reopen after the pandemic closure. And that for a time was derelict as well. But that was one that was again brought back to life. People again are kind of seeing the value of them. And I think a lot of people want to swim in them again. They want to swim outdoors.
Christopher Beanland there speaking to this show's producer, May Lee Evans. Thank you both. Christopher's book, Lido, A Dip into Outdoor Swimming Pools, The History, Design and People Behind Them, is published by Batsford and available to purchase now at all self-respecting bookstores. And sadly, that's all we have time for on this week's show. But if you are eager for a few more design-minded delights, then do listen to our full-length programme airing on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. London time or available as a podcast thereafter. You can also seek out Monocle magazine, subscribe to our daily bulletins, look at our books on our website. We do collaborations on products. You'll love those too. Head to monocle.com for more of that. Today's show was produced and edited by the ever-patient May Lee Evans. I'm Josh Fennett. Thank you very much for listening, as always, and goodbye.